are listening to the OpenPaddock.net podcast, motorsports commentary for fans by fans.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Open Paddock Podcast number 71. Sean joining you as always on January 4th, the first show of the new year, and with me, as always, Michael. Say hello.
Hello. I am the reason there was an earthquake in Kokomo, Indiana.
Nice. Jesus. And we also have Doug. No, we don't have Doug. We have... Do we have Chris? No, no Christy. No Doug, no Christy. So just us tonight.
It's sort of a nostalgic evening. If it's just me and Sean, it's kind of like a throwback episode.
I know, right? instead of cleverly titling it the throwback episode, I have dubbed it the Mega Millions episode, because tonight is the Mega Millions drawing that is at estimated $330 million. And This is only time Dad ever plays the lottery, is when the money gets up there. And now I've already made commitments with the money if I win. However, if those commitments fall through, I will be taking that full amount of money and actually investing and opening my own WRC team. And I will be also said driver, and I will be the one that will give Petter Solberg a job because nobody else seems to have a freaking clue. So
sweet. So it'll be the Pishan Solberg World Rally Team.
No. It'll be the Open Paddock World Rally Team.
Yes.
And it will be, and our car will be painted the what I like to call the royal purple. And it will be a Ford. If I win, I will commit to a Ford Fiesta RS WRC program. And our car will be royal purple with the Open Paddock logo on the hood, and I will give a second seat to Petter Solberg. And if I can't make the hack in driving the car myself, then I will hire John Cassidy from Last Ditch Racing, and he will be my WRC driver in my Fiesta. But that's only if I win the Mega Millions.
Nice.
So, you see, I'm a visionary. I don't even have the money, and I've already spent it all.
I'm thinking positive thoughts for you right now. My chi is good. Mm. I'm enjoying my cup of fine Chinese tea and my fine Chinese teapot.
Yes, that is a fine teapot indeed, good sir.
Indeed.
Nearly sold me on it.
Well, you know, I'll send you a picture of it tomorrow and get you going. You know, and if you win the millions, the least you could spare is $30 for a teapot, right?
Oh, of course. Like I said, that's the pot that you're talking about is an exotic teapot. So I have to have exotic and fine of everything. So I will buy one of those teapots.
Indeed.
So, well, enough of my dreaming of spending millions of dollars. Let's
speak of somebody who has spent millions of dollars for Ford.
Yes. Yes.
Citroën.
Yes. We're gonna bust it down here real quick. We're gonna cover about 10 minutes of rally news, then we're going to talk about some interesting news in IndyCar that came about today, and then we're going to roll into our Formula One and ALMS version of our off-season wrap-ups. I tried to get in touch with Todd over at F1B and told him to slide me some F1 cheater notes on what's going on in the off-season. However, I haven't heard back from him. So, dang it. I should have, you know, this is bad PR on my part. I should have had him on the show. I read somewhere. Did you know that our website was built by the guy who has the biggest and most popular Formula One site in North America?
I've heard this, yes.
Yes, I heard this. And so Todd, I know that you listen to the show in passing, but I would like to say it is a complete and utter huge honor to have the biggest F1 site in North America build our humble site. And I just want to say thank you for that, as always, as we go into the new year. So now we're going to move into the rally portion. And what were you saying about some guy who spends a lot of money on cars?
That would be a certain fellow by the name of Kimi Räikkönen. He seems to have trouble keeping it on the tarmac.
Yes.
Just a bit.
Yes.
Sort of a Lotus-esque relationship, you know, a KV-esque relationship going on here.
Yes, I agree completely. But actually, tragic news for Mr. Räikkönen is right before Christmas, his father died. And now, you know, it's already tough. All right, we rag on him all the time on the show, and it's in good fun. But when somebody actually goes and loses a family member, you know, like that, it's, you know, it's a terrible time. And so we want to wish that family, you know, wish him the best of luck in dealing with that. And, you know, right before Christmas, too. I mean, Merry Christmas, right? I mean, geez. But Kimmy, but this has actually changed things. Now, the last time I believed anything the Finnish media said, I got burned by Autosport. So I'm going to take it with a grain of salt. But reliable sources within the Finnish media quoting, I do believe they were quoting Mr. What's his name? Cash Lindstrom telling the his co-driver, telling the Finnish media that since the death of Matti Räikkönen, all plans are on ice. So he is right now kind of reflecting on what's happening and seeing whether or not he wants to continue or whether he should just halt motorsport for now. Really a lot of questions for Kimi. So, and we do wish the best of luck with him. I know that, you know, he's still between Monster, Citroen, and Mini. Crash.net saying Monster or Mini, and also Autosport saying Citroen again. So really it's up in the air for the Finnish champ. So we'll have to see what happens. And let's see. So that's all from Mr. Räikkönen. Mini, and in an interesting little bit, the egg is actually coming before the chicken.
Do tell.
Yes. The Mini, as you know, the Mini team is not slated to show up till a bit later in the season for whatever reason. You know, they're testing or whatnot. It doesn't matter. They're not in it for the championship this year. So they're kind of debating on when they're going to come about. But the Brazilian team that we were discussing previously, that's going to run the SWRC this year and then the World Championship next year, is actually going to compete in Portugal. So before the full-up Big Daddy Mini comes out to tackle the World Championship, the Brazilian World Rally Team will be competing in Portugal for their first drive. And again, they have lots of pro drive logistics and support behind them. So that's, you know, really, these guys are probably, you know, we'll send the chassis out first and then we'll come a bit later. We just want to see how things happen. So I'm sure they'd rather debut their S2000 car and have something go wrong as opposed to debuting the World Rally car and having something go wrong. And then people start to wonder, you know, well, is this Subaru again? You know, the later ages of Subaru, you know, has ProDrive really got it figured out yet? I mean, you know, kind of one of those things. So Brazilian team, just waiting to find out exactly what the mothership is going to do. But the Brazilian team will be in Portugal. So there you have it.
Good deal. Good deal getting the SWRC, the Super 2000 car out there, the chassis, and get some miles banged on it, get some rocks bounced off the suspension and see what happens.
Exactly. And you tweeted something a bit interesting earlier in the week that which Autosport would then carry a bit sooner. What in the hell's up with your boy Petter Solberg and his apparent world touring car?
Yeah, I mean, you know, last week we were hearing that Petter was going to be at Pikes Peak. And we all said, yay. And then this week we hear he's going to be in World Touring Car. And everybody goes, what? What's that?
Yeah.
That would be the FIA's World Touring Car Championship. That it's really not all that interesting.
No, it's not. So yeah, Solberg having a real rough go of getting the financing for his Citroen operation, or really any rally operation at the moment. So it's looking as though we're going to be seeing perhaps Petter Solberg in the World Touring Car Championship. However, the news with Kimi Raikkonen now reopens the door for Petter. You know, maybe if Raikkonen doesn't go, maybe Solberg does. But at the moment, it looks as though you know, the World Touring Car Championship was where he was looking. We also know that he does like circuit racing, and has you know, tested a number of machines, you know. And so, I mean, it really it caught me by surprise, and I'm still surprised as I talk about it right now, because I can't fathom not having Petter Solberg in the World Rally Championship. But definitely scary, kind of scary times. And my point, and I put this on the Total Rally Facebook page in complete shock and anger. But and again, all things aside from Kimi Raikkonen's personal stuff, because, you know, we've already cleared the air on that one. But in terms of his rally craft and rally capability, what the hell is going on at Citroen where they don't want to hire somebody like Solberg to take over one of those seats, but would rather hire Raikkonen? Is it because of the money? Because it's a business? Because last time I checked, the business that they're in is to win rallies.
Yeah, you know, are they? Did I hear right? Are they rebranding the junior team as something else?
Yes, I don't know what they're going to call them, but they're the Citroen came out and said that it would no longer be the Citroen Juniors, because Sebastian Ogier had been moved up to the mothership team, so they were not developing talent at this point.
Yeah, and really, it doesn't make sense to have Solberg involved in a junior team. You know, we've had that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're rebranding it as a non-junior team, if Kimi Raikkonen was the guy that they wanted for that, and now they're considering, you know, something else, if Raikkonen is considering something else, I don't know.
I mean,
Go ahead.
I understand that he's 2007 champion and brings a lot of nice publicity to the team. I get that. Finnish people love him, and that's a good mix. The issue that I have is that I don't think that he deserves that particular seat. I mean, I know that the WRC is currently kind of in a state of pay and drive, kind of like some of the things we've heard with IndyCar, and that's not a bad thing, because people like Kim Block are paying, and that Monster outfit is paying to have him drive.
Does his talent? You might mean like half the grid in F1 too. I mean, let's be nice. Real
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
Just ask Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, and also ask Pastor Maldonado.
Yeah,
which we'll get to in a bit. But you know, you look at this, and okay, I understand there needs to be some kind of pay to drive scheme, because does Kim Block true? I mean, he's a good driver, but he's tough to put in the top flight of rally unless he brings a crap ton of money, which he does, and he brings a crap ton of exposure to the American audience. But Petter Solberg is, if I'm running a rally team, just as I, you know, said earlier, if I win my lottery ticket, I'm hiring Petter Solberg. The guy proved in a dated car, albeit a year, but a dated car with a privateer effort, that he can still win rallies, or at least fight for rally wins if he's not winning. Why do you not want that?
You know, how could you even compare Kimi Raikkonen to Petter Solberg? You can't.
You really can't. It's kind of unfair, to be honest.
Petter Solberg is a personable guy. He sells himself. Kimi Raikkonen does not.
No.
Kimi Raikkonen eats Dove bars and drinks vodka.
Which is nothing wrong with that. If I win my money, I'm dressing up in gorilla suits, eating Dove bars, and drinking vodka all day.
Sweet.
So
can I join you?
No. That's
dude.
Weird.
Okay, I won't be in the gorilla suit. How about that?
Fair enough. But I will share my vodka and maybe some of the Dove bars. Sweet. You can have normal Dove bars. I'll take the Dove ice cream bars.
I'll be one of your posse.
Yes, one of my entourage, as they had on that show.
Well, so. Some connect the dots on Solberg, though. Phil Mills left his employ last year, retired from being co-driver. And Solberg spent the rest of the year with a different co-driver. And while it probably wasn't terrible, it maybe got him thinking about other types of racing because he'd been with Phil for so long. Mm-hmm. It's possible that World Touring Car is just another direction to go because, well, you know, the magic is gone.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I find it difficult, though, because I remember watching a video, like the video that I always reference with Neil Cole that had made it onto the Twitter and is on YouTube, I think. But, you know, the day that they were there was the day that Petter was expecting something because he had his phone with him and he was really anticipating a call. Now, what the interesting thing is he was really giddy and kind of excited about it. So, like, I think that the passion's still there. I think that definitely, like you said, I think that, you know, losing your co-driver after that long could be tough. But I don't know. Maybe World Touring Car, maybe just another feather in the cap, maybe just experience something different. But I truly believe that Petter Solberg belongs in the WRC, and it is an absolute shame and just ridiculous that he does not get a ride.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, if Petter's not in a rally car next year, somebody in IndyCar needs to hire him. I mean, Ganassi. We should start a team just for him.
Nice. We've detected a fanboy explosion just outside Columbus, Ohio. So. But enough of my off my soapbox. I think every episode ever since the end of the off season, I think I've griped about that to a certain extent about Petter Solberg. So, you know.
Well, how about just like you said, let's get off the soapbox and get onto the desert stages.
Nice. I don't know. I'm scared. The Dakar Rally scares me, but it is the Dakar Rally going on in Argentina right now. We just today finished the third stage. Let's see, up to this point, it's been all Carlos Sainz in the car division. Day one, he took a nice victory. Day two, he also took victory. But American drivers on day two had some issues. Robbie Gordon, would end up hitting a rock and sliding off and hitting a rock, losing valuable time. And Mark Miller, the American who drives for Volkswagen, also had a pretty gnarly crash and tore up the front of his race Touareg. So that leads us into today, which was day three, and Nasser Al-Attiyah would take the stage win over Carlos Sainz. So,
oh my.
Yeah, so big deal there. A great win.
What is Al-Attiyah driving?
I'm 100% certain that he is in a Volkswagen. Okay. Sorry. I don't even know. The reason I thought about that was because I was thinking back to the year previous when he was in, I thought he was in a BMW.
Hmm.
But Al-Attiyah is in the V-Dub because he's in the Touareg for crying out loud. Petter Hensel is in the BMW. So, damn you. So let's see. So this is what this is the way it goes. Overall, let's see. It's a Carlos Sainz show still with Al-Attiyah second. And Stefan Petter Hensel third, with his BMW X3 falling behind Al-Attiyah after the stage win. So he's only 59 seconds behind Al-Attiyah today, though. So he's not overly in trouble, but he is trailing Carlos by 4 minutes and 19 seconds. So, and nobody has heard or known anything of Gordon or Miller after their little bad second day. So, interesting in the world of Dakar. And that race really scares me because people die in that race. Like, people don't die because of accidents. People die because they get lost and wander off into the desert. I mean, that is not cool, man. You cannot go and die so because you get lost. But, yeah, so there's the Dakar. Still got plenty of time in that one. So, but I'm pulling for Signs because of his WRC connection. So, yeah, El Matador.
I'm enjoying the website for Dakar. Mm. There is a link to a quiz for Dakar.
Oh, nice.
Participate to the Dakar official quiz. What? How is that proper English? Well, anyway, quiz is spelled with two Z's.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so, you know, they have some interpretation issues there. No big deal.
The French.
Oui, oui.
Yeah, exactly. The French. Well, I was trying to sign up to get press releases for the Dakar rally, you know, just like, hey, you know, send us stuff. And I was like, I was looking at it and I couldn't believe I was lost. So I was like, how do I do this? So, interpretation issues for sure. We also have, let's go ahead and move on to our IndyCar segment. So that's all we have for rally this week. Monty's coming up though, so get ready for that. I'm excited. Like a kid in a candy shop for Monty, even though it is the IRC. But today we had some really interesting news come out for IndyCar today, Mike. And it's one that is not new to the realm of motorsport this season, as the WRC has already had issues with it, as has Formula One. And that was Indy Star, Kurt Cavan over at the Indianapolis Star came out and said that there was chances that Firestone may be looking at picking up shop.
Well, isn't that like what happened to the Metrodome?
Nice.
That's the air bursting out of the bubble. Oh man. Well, let's say what this is and what it isn't. This isn't the announcement the Firestone has left.
No.
What it is Firestone had a contract that went through December 31st.
Yes.
And at this point, that contract has not been renewed. The other thing to keep note of is that Randy Bernard is in discussions with Firestone. And let me tell you, I'm a whole lot more comfortable that Randy is leading these discussions as compared to Tony.
Yes.
What it is, it's concerning. If Firestone doesn't come back, you know, Firestone, there's a lot of brand equity with the Firestone IndyCar.
Yeah. You think? I mean, say, just a little bit. Just a wee little bit.
Ray Haroon in the Marmon Wasp was shod by Firestone tires. And it's kind of hard to get past that history. It's kind of like the FIA trying. Well, no, never mind. It's not that. It's not the Ferrari and FIA and world championship kind of caliber thing where Ferrari is IndyCar. But no, it's nothing like that. But Firestone is huge in IndyCar, and their involvement in IndyCar has been just undeniably one of the better sponsors for the series, one of the better providers for the series for decades.
Yeah.
Yes, other tire manufacturers have been involved. Yes, Goodyear's been there. Yes, you know, you go down the list. There are a ton of manufacturers that have been there in the years of open competition. What it isn't, it's not the end of IndyCar if Firestone doesn't come back. However, the IndyCar series is right to do everything they can to try and make sure they do come back.
Yes. Yes. I mean, because wasn't one of the facts that Kevin Allen thing was like at one point they had won like something in the neighborhood of like 43 straight 500s.
Yeah.
Back in the days of open competition. I mean.
Oh, man.
I mean, so.
No, I didn't see that. So
I think
that's cool.
It was like between the 20s and the 60s, they won like something like 43 Indy 500s or something. I may be completely misquoting the article, but I'm pretty sure that it was some kind of – I mean, the number was ridiculous.
Yeah.
That they had won. So, you know, I think that for sure – you're like you say, they need to be doing everything to really try to bring him back. Not the end of the world, but, you know, it's one of those things. You need to have that kind of recognition. And also for Firestone, they need to be thinking about themselves as well. Because look at, you know, with all the stuff that they've had, you know, come about in their time. As a street tire manufacturer, about the only way that I know there's two ways I know Firestone: by their IndyCar stuff, and by the fact that at one point their tires were blowing up and sending Ford Explorers catapulting down the interstate. So, you know,
yikes.
Yeah, I was a bit nervous, to be completely honest, about getting in any of those and anything that was clad in those tires. But they've done well with the IndyCar series. I think that the Firestone kind of needs Indy as well as a brand name. Maybe Bridgestone doesn't, but if they leave IndyCar, I don't see why Firestone is even around anymore, because I personally won't even care. I will buy Bridgestones before I buy Firestones. So, it does a lot for them too. It's not just hey, Indy needs these people.
Well,
you know, they need Indy too, because they're kind of the name.
Yeah, there is equity in the name Firestone, in that Firestone was an American tire manufacturer before they got bought by the Japanese rubber company Bridgestone. That brand equity still exists, and there's a reason they just didn't change everything to Bridgestone. I don't think, you know, if they pull from IndyCar, I don't think they're going to suddenly decide that everything needs to be Bridgestone. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
IndyCar is such a blip on today's radar screen. You know, with all their dealership, all their local service centers and everything like that, branded Firestone. I, you know, there's too much equity in the name. That's not going to go away. It would hurt IndyCar to lose that name. Because I mean, who else would provide the comic relief behind the podium celebrations other than the Firestone Firehawk?
To be honest, I think that if Firestone would leave, that would probably be the only reason why I'd want them to. Is I hate that damn bird. I hate it.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's there for the kids, and that's about it.
He sucks at shooting the t-shirt cannon off. So what good are you? He pointed to me at the 500 on bump day. I was with my mother on Mother's Day was it pole day? Or no, it was second day of qualifying. I was wide open. He pointed to me and missed.
You know,
you are a trained professional with that firearm, Firehawk. Why do you miss?
You know what? I bet the Firehawk is actually one of the tire engineers.
I don't care.
And they're not exactly the best shot.
You know? I don't care. He should have been. I was wide open. There was nobody around me within a country mile. He shot it into the second deck because he doesn't know how trajectory works. So if he's an engineer, he sucks, because he should have known trajectory. Get to me. He was aiming way too high to get there.
You know, what they need to do is get the explosive experts from Dateline NBC, who blew up all those Ford trucks years ago.
Nice.
Remember that? They
yes.
They put little explosive device, little sparking devices right by the fuel tank, so that when the fuel tank started leaking, the car would catch on fire.
Nice. That's awesome.
Good job, Dateline.
Yeah. Good God.
We still think you're worthless.
I still do, yes. But I like to watch it because they have those funny episodes where they try to, quote-unquote, catch a predator. And it's really funny
nice.
To watch those. So, seeing some sap. Did you say to Nancy413 at yahoo.com, it's like, no! And then they just start,
not.
And then they start wigging out, and they're like, I just want my mommy. It's like, haha, get humiliated, chump. Anyways, enough of that. I agree with you that it would be tough for IndyCar because of the brand recognition. But again, I think perhaps opposed to your viewpoint, I do think that, you know, I think it would sort of hurt a little on their end too. It's not just a one-way street, I guess.
Yeah, let's go about this a different way. Yes, if Firestone leaves, that's bad for IndyCar. It would be better that they stay on board, and I think there's no better person to try and keep them on board than, say, Randy Bernard. One thing that was pointed out in some of the articles that came out today is, you know, Al Spire and his team, they're not interested in leaving IndyCar. It's up the chain, and it's not their decision. That said, who else could fill in the gap? You talk about, you know, the remainder of the tire manufacturers, the big name ones, the Goodyears, Michelins, Coopers, Pirellis, those sorts of people. D-Mac.
Definitely nice. The mighty D-Mac tires.
D-Mac. Maybe get some Hoosier rubber back on the cars, but no, that's probably not going to happen because Hoosier only exists as a racing tire and they aren't out to brand themselves. Yes. Yeah, Firestone kind of pays to be involved in IndyCar, not the other way around. So, anyway, the only one that really stands out is Cooper, because Cooper's involved with the feeder series in some ways, and they're joined at the hip with Mazda, and Mazda's just come on board with the whole sponsoring Road to Indy.
Nice.
I can't imagine that would spawn much more than continued involvement in the Road to Indy. I can't imagine that Cooper ends up being the tire for IndyCar. We'll see where this goes. Like I said, hopefully Randy Bernard gets this resolved and we don't have to deal with it anymore. And it's just one of those scary little articles that you just smile at when the situation's resolved.
Yeah. It was really funny because you looked on the Twitter sphere and they came out as soon as Kevin tweeted it. Everybody's just like, "Oh no!" They're like, "We knew it. We can't ever have a year of nothing but good news." I'm like, "Take it easy." So, but yeah. You know, no one's even confirmed anything yet. I mean, let's just take a breath and take a step back here. So it was pretty funny, but you know, again, no reason to be alarmed at the moment. So they said that it should be resolved by the end of the week.
Yeah, there were some comments to that effect, so we should know shortly. But let's keep in mind we still don't know if we're going to Edmonton next year. So. It could take a while. The contracts, they're interesting little things. They're tricky when it comes to that. Speaking of the Twitter sphere, I have been laughing a bit today because J.R. Hildebrand was off somewhere doing indoor skydiving.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he put through a tweet to Panther, basically saying that the skydiving instructor said I was a natural. Think you can hook a brother up with a C-130 to jump out of?
Oh, JR.
Very nice. Using those connections.
Yeah. I, good sir, may or may not have a proposition for you. As I, you know, I actually probably have, you know, at any given time, I have them parked, you know, about, you know, 1,500 feet behind my house. So, nice. You know, anytime, you know, we can work something out here. And I know you're with that whole National Guard thing, but that's the Air Force too. So just, you know, let me know. We'll get you in a plane.
The Air National Guard can be involved in this kind of stuff too, you know. Hey. Joint sponsorship.
Yes, exactly. It's a joint universe. So, all right, let's see. And okay, so maybe by the end of this week we'll have some decisions, but that will lead us right into next week, and we have the State of the Series address on, what, the 11th?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. You know, Marshall Pruitt's articles talking with Randy Bernard, that came up in those articles, the 20 questions with Randy Bernard that was talked about last week. Interestingly enough, they were asking Randy Bernard, you know, what have you brought to the series? And Randy said, pretty much absolutely nothing. To this point, I've been listening. And next week, you're going to start hearing about my business plan for the series.
Nice.
And I'm really excited to hear his vision casting for the series, because so far, he's been able to get enough people excited about IndyCar by talking with them. he's probably, you know, there are some things he's talked about briefly. There are some things he's talked about a little more openly. You know, for example, in this article with Marshall Pruitt, he alluded to the fact that there were going to be this giant, massive driver introduction tower.
Be there, be there, be there.
Exactly. Flames shooting out the top, you know. Okay. But we'd never heard that before. And it's just these little snippets that we hear on occasion as that comes out talking about putting up position poles all throughout road and street courses. They're going to commission some new, you know, driver timing and scoring type data poles that people can see. You know, these are the positions on the track, more jumbotrons at the track, you know, that kind of stuff. But what I'm most interested in is the business you know, the business development side. What is the business plan for IndyCar going forward? He said that he wants to get to 25 races. Well, how do we get to 25 races? You have to make it valuable to the owners to have 25 races. Okay. To make it valuable to the owners, you've got to get better sponsorship on board or be able to convince existing sponsors that you're providing additional value. So their sponsorship needs to be a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. From year to year, you have to grow the number of races to do that. You can't go from a 17 race schedule to a 25 race schedule. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, that Rome's not built in a day.
Yeah, I mean, as much as the FIA would like to decree that there shall be four brand new F1 teams in the season, it can't happen. And when you do make those decrees, what happens is you get teams like HRT, which is currently for sale.
Nice.
And is planning on using their 2010 chassis to be their 2011 car. Yeah.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
They were not prepared to be involved in F1, and maybe a little slower introduction to F1 would have been in order, but...
baptism by fire.
Yeah, I digress.
Yeah, right.
Sean, what are your thoughts on this potential State of the Union address? What do you expect to hear from Randy Bernard? Any thoughts from that?
Well, I'm actually really excited. I'm actually really excited to hear it because as a guy who's not, you know, I'm not the best at it, I guess, the best at covering the series. I try my hardest, but I'm still, you know, somewhat kind of a fan at heart, trying to still get used to some of the stuff. And one of the things that I really hope to hear, you know, is a progress report with what's going on with you know, the future cast in terms of manufacturers. Mm-hmm. With Aero and body kits and stuff. Okay, so we already have a couple here now. What is he projecting for the future beyond 2011? Also for 2011, or you know, for the things in 2011. You know, I mean, 2011 is pretty much in the books. I don't think that we're going to have much that comes out that's like, well, for 2011, starting in 2011, we're going to do this, because 2012 is a whole new breed. You're pretty much wiping the slate clean.
Yeah,
so
2011 is how you promote yourself.
Exactly.
Because nothing new is going to happen in 2011. Yeah. And if it does, that's great. It's exciting to hear, you know, potential new ideas. Like, mm-hmm. going into 2011, we know we're going to have a doubleheader race at Texas.
Yeah.
We know we're going to have a season ender at Las Vegas. That is going to be something different. It sounds like it's going to be promoted by the IndyCar series, and that may be a new business model for the IndyCar series of self-promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And Lord knows they can do a whole lot better job than some of the races have been promoted so far.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. You talk strong about, you know, we want venues that will promote us. Well, how are you going to do that? You know, what are you going to do?
Show them how to promote it.
Yeah, exactly. Show them how you want it promoted. You know, work with them. Also, I'd like to know where he's going you know, obviously in an interest of my own, I'd like to know where he's going, you know, with in terms of using, you know, things such as social media, the blogs and stuff like that. We had, you know, just recently that IndyCar PR summit that we had, that, you know, blogs were represented by Mr. Dalby over at More Front Wing. You know, how are you gonna use our stuff, you know, or what other kinds of, you know, I mean, there's so many things all across it that I would like to hear, and I don't think one address, you know, is going to necessarily, to cover that, and I don't expect it to. I just want to hear his ideas, his general, you know, no kidding, my ideas, and move along with it. Because if he says he hasn't done anything, you know, what else? You know, what else is going on? So what's going on in that head?
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe we'll hear things like, maybe they'll put that huge monster fire spouting driver intro tower on top of the Bellagio or something.
I really hope that doesn't happen.
Oh, come on.
I really don't want to see that.
And then Hildebrand can skydive off the top.
Yes, exactly.
Something I would like to hear is a good discussion of how they're moving forward with Versus television deal, mm-hmm. and possibly improved
too.
And expanded internet discussions as to how they're going to use the internet to promote the IndyCar series. You can't have obviously the website is what it is. The new website guy that they've got at IndyCar basically came in and said, yeah, this is crap. We're gonna start over for 2011.
I agree.
yeah, and I did too. And it's been a continuous thing where people have knocked the shoddy quality of, the video streaming and things like that. Well, going forward, what do we do with the website? What can we get from the website? How does IndyCar integrate with social media? Do we see some really cool hooning done in an IndyCar thrown up as, you know, Gymkhana 4?
That's sick.
That would be awesome. You know, there are ways that you can use the high technology and the high power and the interesting drivers that you have to put out good promotional videos that aren't overproduced with gleaming smiles, you know. And, oh, welcome to the IndyCar series. We're the best place for you to learn, you know,
What?
No, seriously. Look at those Gymkhana videos. They speak for themselves. They sell the product because they show something cool going on, not because they say, hi, we're IndyCar, we're cool.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, going forward with the internet, I want to see the website.
Yes.
Really hashed out and figured out so that it's better.
And race control, also.
Ooh, race control. Yeah, it's about time that Little Al steps in for Mr. Barnhart.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I deal with that. I can dig it.
Yeah.
So, well... Okay, so let's see, what else do we have here? Is that it for the State of the Union?
Yeah, that's really all I've got on the State of the Union. We're looking forward to hearing the business plan going forward, and I expect to hear some interesting things next week that are the untelegraphed punches coming at my glass jaw.
Nice.
When it comes to IndyCar media, I still have a glass jaw, and I'm waiting for them to surprise me.
Excellent. All right. Well, is that it for our news for this week in our headlining series? Are we going to move to our other series here?
Yeah, let's talk about some F1 off season, and then we'll jump into ALMS off season. We've got some big stuff going on in American Le Mans series that just broke, and it's got some people a little bit upset.
Yeah, and they don't like me.
Well, beyond that, it's got some people pretty happy too.
Yes, I'm happy.
And I would say I'm one of them.
Yes, I'm happy.
So.
Yeah, but other people not so much. Well, let's go ahead and start.
Tell me, with the new changes that were not so much the changes for 20, the changes for 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about what's going to happen in 2011. This is ridiculous. These cars are just about wacky enough. In 2011, we are going to have adjustable rear wings.
What?
You're going to have a button, a special button in the cockpit.
Yes.
That will adjust the rear wing angle. We've already had movable front wings in F1.
And flexies.
And flexi wings. So they've dropped the movable front wing. It will no longer be used in 2011. But we're going to go to an adjustable rear wing.
Okay. Fair enough.
Here's the kicker on it. It can be adjusted electronically anytime during practice and qualifying, but during the race, It can only be used when a driver is less than a second behind another car.
What? What the hell does that even mean?
Yeah, at predetermined timing points on the track. And then the system is deactivated once the driver brakes.
Okay. What the hell is that? You know, like I said, I wish we would have brought Todd on because I'm sure he could explain it a lot better than you or I. But what the hell does that mean? You can now push a button, but you can only push the button at certain points. I mean,
well, what they're getting at is that at timing strips on the track, they'll probably put them. My guess would be they'll probably put these at the beginning of long straights. And if you're less than a second behind the car in front of you going into a long straight, then it allows you to fool around with the wing angle so that you can catch up. That's really that's really the only point for this is that potential. Now, I don't like how that works out. If you're going to make it adjustable, let them screw around with the thing all they want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't sit there and give them, oh, well, when you're behind somebody, then that means you can flatten your rear wing. And once you get that rear wing flattened, it means you can go a little faster. And then you can press your little KERS button. And then you'll just shoot right past them. I mean, it's basically the Hanford device coming to F1.
And once every lap, you'll be able to fire a red Koopa shell.
Yes, indeed. Red Cooper shells. And and don't forget the shortcuts that Bernie wants to throw in.
Oh, of course, yes.
Sweet.
I don't really get it. So what's that mean? If you're the lead car, you're not allowed to change your...
If you're the lead car, that means, you know, this is the way things are going to go. Yeah, if you're the lead car, you can't adjust the wing angle. If you're the following car, you certainly can so that you can catch up. It's... Once again, they're writing rules to get around the fact that their rules don't make it so the cars can follow each other.
Mm-hmm.
One more attempt to increase overtaking in F1. I don't know how many they've had. I'm sure there's hundreds of them that have happened that I'm not even aware of.
Yeah.
But clearly the adjustable front wing didn't work. clearly going to tire-only pit stops didn't work. Clearly going to no tire pit stops didn't work. How many more of these changes do we have to see before everybody says, yeah, this is just a laughing stock. How about you just have racing?
Yeah. How about you just have proper circuits that allow for overtaking?
Ooh, yes. We've been through that, haven't we? And,
yes.
And most of the team principals have basically said the tracks suck.
Yeah. But we're just going to continue to gimmick it with all these little fancy flashes and buttons, and we're going to go ahead and try to work with what we have.
Yeah.
Yet, real tracks such as Spa and, you know, other such historic tracks were just fine for overtaking. But, you know, this is one of those things where FIA, it's like a damn snowball. You get you start buying out on these real cheap crap tracks that are tilky neutered. And now all of a sudden you're like, well, we're kind of stuck with them. We don't really have anywhere else to go. And yeah. Now you are looking at, well, the racing here sucks and nobody likes it. Well, now we're going to spend even more money on gimmicks. So now not only are you going to places where nobody really even cares, like Turkey, China, just for example, now you have cars that now have little push button gimmicks that, you know, that they have to use because they can't leave the tracks they signed on for.
Yeah.
And they ditch places like San Marino, or Imola or whatever, and, you know, talking on and off about Spa, Hockenheim, and Nuremberg. You know, you can't have the good tracks anymore. You've got to have these little tilky neutered Istanbuls and stuff, and they're not fun to watch, and nobody can overtake. So now you have the gimmick, and now you look like fools, and nothing more than a video game.
Yeah, so.
I mean, I love the sport to death, but for crying out loud.
Yeah, when I played the 2009 Wii version of F1, you press the special button to enable the KERS, and you get the lines kind of moving past the cockpit like you're going really fast, you know, and you hear this.
You know? It's like, what the hell was that?
Turbo!
Yeah, right? I was like, was that the air brake? I mean...
All- all bottle, no throttle.
Nice. I felt like I was in one of the many Fast and the Furious sequels.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, jeez. But this is the adjustable rear wings. Well, that's kind of like F1. F1 has the adjustable goalposts every year because they've got to make a major change to the rules every year to make sure that nobody comes in with a budget-produced car.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to make things different year to year. So this year, as opposed to the last couple, they're actually going to enforce no double-decker diffusers.
Yes.
Even though, yeah. Thanks, Ross Brawn. He did a great job of saying, here's your loophole in your rule book. I told you about it. And here's why it was a loophole in the rule book. And thank you for the championship.
Yeah, and I've now destroyed you.
Yeah. So no double-decker diffusers. And the F-ducts that came into being this year that everybody spent a buttload of money on, well, they're not going to be allowed next year.
Awesome. And that was – did FOTA not agree with that? Were they like, yeah, we'll just get rid of these things?
Yeah, I think the biggest reason that FOTA shot that down, all members except for, well, McLaren.
Mercedes. Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. Of course, McLaren doesn't want to shoot it down. The F-duct was their idea, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a huge, huge coup for them because it was designed into the chassis.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought they had a one-up on everybody on it. They did. They did have a one-up on everybody except Red Bull, who had a better design with their super breath double-decker diffuser that took engine exhaust and turned it to seconds.
Nice. Well, as we mentioned previously, the return of the bastardized KERS system is imminent. So shelter yourself, and if you're Kimi Raikkonen, do a Texas two-step out of your car. So... that's in there as well. I wish Doug was here to explain it because he was better at the whole KERS device. But it looks like they upped the car weight by 20 kilo to 640 kilo to accommodate. And supposedly, it's, you know, they upped the car weight mainly because it's really difficult right now with no refueling, you know, no small fuel tanks. You got to have a big mammoth fuel tank, but now you have no room for batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've got the boost button coming back on the Formula One cars again. And hopefully this time we have no cars spontaneously combusting and sending electrical charges or sending BMW mechanics through garage walls. So,
and seeing Kimi Raikkonen leap from the car.
Yes, his Texas two-step, if you will. Let's see, also wheel tethers. Because this wasn't a good idea last year, so now this year, finally, we're going to get around to it. Wheel tethers will stay or will be on the car, stricter tethers. Didn't they used to have wheel tethers after that Jacques Villeneuve incident?
Yeah, wheel tethers have been in F1 for a long time. It's just that they're going to add a second wheel tether.
Yeah, that's right.
To the cars. And kind of an interesting thing, the tethers have to be fully contained in separate suspension members. So you can't have like the upper wishbone and the lower wishbone. You can't have both tethers in the same piece of suspension. So you'll probably have one coming from the upper and one from the lower wishbone.
Mm. So due to the fact that, you know, I don't know, maybe when Fernando's Alonso wheel went flying off, or maybe the Surtees? Surtees, son. That was a freak accident. But regardless, you know, okay, we waited another year, nothing happened, and now, after the Buemi incident, was it Buemi this year who had that suspension absolutely like looked like somebody hit an explosive device on this year, and he went sliding down the front straightaway, still trying to steer the car with no wheels. So and maybe wheel tethers should have been instrumented last year, but you know.
Well, my own thoughts on this, and people can disagree with me, but the FIA has for far too long allowed carbon suspension in F1.
Mm-hmm.
Carbon suspensions blow up and have massive failures, whereas a metal suspension, aluminum, whatever, exotic, titanium, whatever,
right?
it kind of bends before it shatters. And the problem with suspension in F1 is it's such an active part of the car.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets a minor flaw in it, it continues to work and work and work. And then the next thing you know, you're Kimi Raikkonen off the track with one lap to go. Yeah, to me, it's a huge safety issue because part of the biggest reason those wheels go bouncing down the track is that there's nothing to hold them in place when the entire suspension just, you know, goes bowling a china shop.
Yeah. Scary stuff. Scary stuff with when you start really getting into those kind of, you know, aerospace kind of materials for your cars. And not to be outdone, the tires. This year we will now we're going to see Pirelli come in instead of Bridgestone after the withdrawal of Bridgestone as part of the 2011 tire allocation rules. There will no longer be 14 sets of dry weather tires available. That you will get 11. And you will have 2 prime and 2 option to use in P1 and P2. And then after that, you will return a set. And then another, 8 sets, I believe it to be, will then be at your disposal pretty much for the rest of the sessions, whether it be qualifying or rain. Yeah. So,
once again, I have to say that I don't know exactly the direction they're going with tires. I think that Pirelli has been told to make softer compounds that degrade so that you actually have pit stops for pit stops' sake instead of pit stops for rules compliance sake, which clearly was a joke in F1 in 2010 when the soft tires could go the entire race distance.
Yes.
I don't know, man. One thing, this is really going to throw a wrench into 2011. People are used to the compounds. You know, when we had the tire wars in F1 with Michelin involved, and clearly Bridgestone was producing superior rubber. When everybody went to the Bridgestones, there was a huge learning curve for the teams that weren't on Bridgestone tires. Pirelli's going to come in with completely different compounds, and teams that are used to the rubber that Bridgestone has been providing are going to be at a bit of a loss for a while until they kind of get the idea of what's going on with these tires. Now, throw into this that they're going to brand new rubber in an era when testing is severely limited. It's going to be interesting to see how these teams respond to new rubber in 2011, especially when they're only given 11 sets on a race weekend.
Yeah. Did you see the kicker? The kicker here, and this is going to be funny, and it next to never happens, but this is the funny part. If a driver fails, and this is from Formula1.com, if a driver fails to use both specifications of dry weather tires during a race, they'll be excluded from the results. Okay, fair enough. Now, if a dry race, say Bahrain, for example, is suspended and cannot be restarted and the driver has failed to use both of those specifications, 30 seconds will be added to the driver's race time. What? What the hell does that mean? So you're telling me, okay, and God forbid if this ever happens, but you're telling me that if I'm 15 laps into the race, okay, and the back markers have come in and changed from the, you know, the primes to the options, and then all of a sudden there's this mammoth accident, you know, complete carnage everywhere, cars everywhere, or say, for example, like a driver death or something like that, you know, God forbid again. But, you know, If a dry race is suspended, okay, and cannot be restarted, you're telling me that old boy, you know, say, you know, Sakan Yamamoto, who stopped for tires, is now gonna, you know, and is only about, we'll say, you know, 27 seconds behind the lead. Now all of a sudden, you know, something happens, the race stops, and everybody, you know, this happens. Now you've got a guy who's going to come up to the front and win because everybody's been penalized 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get it. I mean, really rare, but you know, again, if it is any indication to what happened in 2010 with the openness of the rules and FIA not knowing what the hell to do when something goes south, this will happen in 2011 and we'll all be like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. While they're at it, why don't they change the yellow flag pit stop regulations again? I mean, everybody needs a little more confusion in F1, and that would be a good way to start.
Yeah.
No, you know, I can understand the circumstances that they're going for. I mean, you think back, it's been several years, but there was a race at Interlagos, and in the closing stages of a race, there was a wreck on the front stretch in kind of a blind corner. And, you know, several cars came, you know, the car was in the middle of the track. There was suspension parts strewn everywhere. One of the tires was in the middle of the track. And these cars were going by under yellow flag at race speed. And I believe it was Fernando Alonso that came into that mess pell-mell, full head of steam, and blew up that tire that was in the middle of the track.
Nice.
There was about 10 laps left to go, and they red flagged the race immediately.
Hmm.
So there's the situation. You've got a calamitous accident that takes place with 10 laps to go. Okay, there's the situation where this might come into play. But still, I'm going to go back to stop making gimmick rules. Make it so that, you know, just like we were talking about before, if they make it so the tires are such that you have to come in and change them because of competitive reasons, then you don't have to have the stupid rule.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go on your merry way. And if they came into pit because they needed new rubber, then that's fine. If they didn't come into pit because they didn't need new rubber, or they were pushing it on dead rubber, I think they should be rewarded for it. I don't like these artificial rules in F1, throwing in curves and wing angles and garbage like that, and the stupid restrictions to when you can change your wing angles. This isn't a video game. Stop treating it like one.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Anyway. It's racing. Now it's a gimmick. Gearboxes need to last 5 race weekends now instead of 4.
That's fine.
We're now reintroducing the 107% qualifying rule after said...
HRT rule.
Yeah, exactly. The HRT / Virgin rule. I don't think Virgin was that bad, or Lotus, but HRT rule for sure, or the what we will dub the Milkaduno rule.
Indeed.
So, there are exceptional circumstances, but if you're not within the 107 percentile in the – or 100%, 107% in the first qualifying run, you will not be allowed to start the race. So,
that is good to know. And, you know, Q1, you don't see the fastest time set in Q1. So that throws in another layer. It's not going to be really 107% of the fastest cars. It's going to be 107% of the fastest laps set in Q1.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we all know that those laps can go down by a couple of seconds as you go into Q2 and Q3.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Let's see. Just a couple other things. The team now has a curfew because they don't want them working on the cars all night. So HRT better have their car put together, because there will be no 36-hour stint putting your car together before the first race of the year.
And they've already got stuff in place. Last year, the FIA made it mandatory that the teams pay for a camera system. They would basically they went away from having Parc Fermé.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so after qualifying, what they'd do is you'd pull your car into your garage, you'd put a tarp over your car, and then you'd have a camera in the bay that the FIA would monitor to make sure that you weren't working on your car when it was in Parc Fermé.
Nice.
So now they've got they can use that same camera system to keep an eye on the car and make sure, again, you're not working on it when you're not supposed to. In the curfew hours. But again, can we put a special button on the crew members to make them work like 10% faster?
Nice. They're special.
And they have three pushes on the special button while
nice.
The crew
members,
good inject
gimmick.
The Red Bull intravenously or what have you.
Nice.
Henceforth, starting in 2011, the FIA shall regulate the amount of Red Bull used by said team members. Nice. Team members shall be limited to 1 liter of Red Bull per day, and the maximum of 5 liters of Red Bull per race weekend.
Nice. Nice. I like it. Penalties. The stewards have more power to impose more penalties, just what we needed. Not a good thing, considering
Yes and no. I mean, I think the stewards were much better last year than they have been. And the fact that they were, you know, we may disagree with some of their calls, but the majority of their calls were no calls. And that's better than, you know, the iron hand of the FIA justice coming down and saying, we're taking away your race win.
And also the clause dealing specifically with sporting regulation or team orders has been removed. So take it for what you will, but it looks like team orders are back in Formula One, which I shouldn't even say that because they never really left. It's just now you can't get in trouble for it. So
to some extent, they did throw in the caveat that, keep in mind, Article 151C still exists and we will enforce it to the fullest extent. So they're saying, yes, team orders are gone, but you better be really coy about it because we're not going to accept you swapping position on the track by saying,
have somebody pull like, over.
Yes, good boy.
Yeah. Confirm you understand. Huh?
Huh?
What? Oh, the car is slowing down. What can I do? So
a lot of interesting new changes to the FIA World Championship. It doesn't change the fact that next year going in, we still have these ridiculous tire regulations.
Yes. Not true statement. Well, looking at drivers so far this year in the off season, the heavy hitters have kept the same lineups, that being Red Bull, McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari, Mercedes GP, and Renault. Mm-hmm. And now we have Williams sees Rubens Barrichello still there, and add a freaky looking Pastor Maldonado.
Freaky.
Yeah, he kind of looks...
He's just bald. That's why his hair is so short.
No, he just kind of looks like Psycho Sid or some kind of...
Is he 40? Is that why he's bald?
It looks like he's just about on par with Rubens for age. BMW... Or, I'm sorry. Slap me. Sorry. Sauber is going to keep Kamui Kobayashi, as they should, because the dude is awesome. And they've signed Sergio Perez from Mexico. He's Mexican, right?
Yeah, he's Mexican. You'll have to,
I'm pretty sure he's Mexican. So, well done. And then we also have, still waiting for Force India, what is it? Di Resta, from DTM, I think is looking pretty good. If he hasn't already gotten the seat, he may be coming close. And Virgin also has Timo Glock.
Virgin Intergalactic.
Nice. I like that. Well played. Timo Glock is staying, but this time they have this Jerome D'Ambrosio joining. Oh, and speaking of these teams, did you see the story this week where Jarno Trulli, no kidding, came out and said he deserved a medal for his place in the championship for being that bad? Does this guy ever shut up?
Oh man.
I mean, I love Lotus and I've always liked Jarno, but what are you doing, dude? First you're running around Brazil when you're in Toyota claiming all hell broke loose and somebody hit you, and now you're coming out and saying you deserve a medal for driving.
I've got so, pictures.
Yeah,
I've got pictures.
I've got pictures, and now he's like, "Oh, I want to
well, you know, maybe some recent comments by Ferrari prompted that. If you remember, Luca de Montezemolo was going off about the third car again recently, and one of the things he said was, guys like Jarno Trulli deserve a lot of credit. You know, do you really think a driver of Jarno Trulli's caliber should be tooling around at the back of the grid like that? Mm-hmm. Just think of what Jarno Trulli could do in a Ferrari, in a third Ferrari.
Yeah. So that's really, there's some other things I'm sure that we're missing, but you know, just as a genuine rundown, that is what we have for Formula One. And for both of these series, please, I know Formula One and both American Le Mans series, we are not going to cover every single thing that happened. But you know, we, these are the things that I'm trying to highlight as, you know, the big points.
Yeah.
For this year. So, and now on to ALMS, and we'll Yeah, on to ALMS. There's some other bantering that's been going on in Formula One we could talk about, but one, it's not for this year, and two, well, it's just bantering happens in Formula One every day, so whatever, as the world turns.
Yeah, because Formula One is such a popular form of racing across the dang planet. It has its own cadre of reporters that range from decent, good reporters like Autosport to National Enquirer kind of level of promotion of the sport too. So, you know, you got your in-betweens. You got the smut mags printing pictures of Max spanking people. And then you got actual news.
Yes. But moving on to Le Mans, some of the big things. Let's first talk some team stuff, and then we'll get into the big one that everybody hates me for. No, just kidding.
Indeed.
Slightly disagree. No hate. All right, so today actually was announced. This is a big announcement, too. You remember that Muscle Milk Cytosport Porsche that actually took a nasty tumble at Mid-Ohio?
Yes, I remember it well. It prompted the discussion of me talking about how Muscle Milk is nasty.
But yeah,
anyway.
But it's good. It's good if you get the right one. Whatever. You're terrible. Oh, never mind. Moving on. The Cytosport team is actually going to, in 2011, be running a full American Le Mans series with V12 Aston Martin power. So we kind of seen Aston Martin on again, off again last year at some of the big races. This year, they're coming to play full time in Le Mans series with this Muscle Milk team. This team was really good with a Porsche too. So now they have a full up V12 powered Aston. It'll be real interesting to see how they perform against the other cars. Mm-hmm. It's the same driver, or it's going to have Greg Pickett and Klaus Graf. But the one thing that's really special about this is the amount that Aston Martin is giving in terms of support. They're going to have people embedded with engineers embedded with the team. They're going to be helping out all of the. Going to be helping out with all, you know, with a lot of the logistics, the data. They even offered up factory drivers to race in the car if they needed them. So, you know, kind of on-call status for factory drivers. So it looks like this team is going to get their the story came out today, so it looks as though we are going to see them pick up the car later this week, and then after a quick shakedown, and then their team is going to begin testing in Sebring for the ALMS winter test that takes place 8 and 9 February. So that is actually really cool, because that team was such an awesome story last year. Drove and performed very well in that dated Porsche. Then they cracked up the tub, if you remember, had to send it back and withdraw from the Mid-Ohio event, and now they've got a big, bad Aston Martin V12 Lola that they get to mess with, so it's going to be sweet. I can't wait. So, yay. Also, up in your neck of the woods, there's some stuff going on. Kind of already talked about it. What was it last week with the IndyCar stuff? But Mr. Lanigan is now, you know, is obviously a part of the Rahal Letterman racing. So that's out there, and now it's going to roll over actually into the that rolls over to all programs. So not just the IndyCar, but also now the BMW. So
championship winning BMW team.
And if you also remember there you go. Did you go and see the banner in the workshop?
No, I did not.
Oh, pathetic. Let's see. So there's that. He's been involved with a lot of other things. What was it? Champ Car, the Newman Haas Lanigan stuff. So now he's going to be involved. He's getting involved with the team altogether. And since their priority at this moment is American Le Mans Series and the BMWs, looks as though he's set to be part of that. And speaking of another IndyCar great, or IndyCar name around the world, Derek Walker, the guy from Walker Racing, is going to be partnering with Falcon Tire to run their Porsche operation in the GT class. So,
yeah, that's an interesting one. Derek has been rumored to be getting back into IndyCar next year, but nothing has really come of that. So we'll wait and see if anything really comes to fruition with that. But Walker Racing goes back to 1992 and in Champ Car with guys like Jan Beekes driving for the team. So, you know, just a long list of very good drivers, you know, Jan Beekes, Jill DeFerrin, good grief, Robbie Gordon, Scott Goodyear, AJ Foyt for a stint.
Yes.
Probably just the 500. Brian Herta, Buddy Lazier, just a long list of guys over the years who have driven for his organization. So
nice.
Sarah Fisher.
Nice. Yeah. Well, basically, the team, the Falcon team, was, you know, from what I understand, is just looking for ways, you know, just, okay, they did well last year. They had some good performances, but, and they have that nice paint scheme that is always, always reminds me of the drift car that they had. But, yeah, they're just really looking for some expertise to get in there, run the show, run the team, and really try to take it to that next level. You know, against the Flying Lizards, the Corvettes, the Ferraris, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, hopefully that, you know, and again, the GT class being as hot as it is right now with all the different competition, I mean, it's really good that they go out and actually get a guy like Walker who has plenty of experience pushing things in terms of racing, and now he's going to be able to contribute and take his expertise to the team and try to push it to, again, to the next step. So, yeah, it's going to be awesome. So it looks like that shop is going to be out of Indianapolis, out of the Walker Racing facility in Indianapolis to become the epicenter, as the release says. So...
very nice.
Yeah, that's very awesome.
Nice for Walker and for ALMS, because Lord knows they need as many competitors as they can.
Yeah. So there's that. And then also, okay, let's see, what else do we have here? Is that, so those are the big ones. That's a lot of the news from today. Well, not the Lanigan bit, but the Walker bit and the Muscle Milk was from today. Lanigan was before. There's a lot of other things. I think John, what is it, O'Connell from the Corvettes has left the Corvette team. But he's not left the GM name. I think he's actually heading to drive the Cadillac in the World Challenge or whatever it is that they've entered the Cadillac. Okay. So he's not gone. He's just out of the vet. There you have it. Now let's get to the big news, though. And I think there was a TV deal there, Mike, that happened.
Yes. And now on to our feature presentation. The American Le Mans Series has signed a TV deal with ESPN 2 and ABC.
Yes.
This is a multi-level deal, not just for broadcast on ESPN ABC, but also for broadcast on ESPN3.com, which would be direct to the internet. ESPN3.com, I believe, is a free internet service.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the deal. What they will do is all races will be tape delayed on television.
Hmm.
I don't believe any of them are actually going to be live.
Okay, fair enough. And understandable as well.
Yeah, it is, especially with Le Mans Series when you're talking about six-hour races. When you're talking about three-hour races or 2:45 or whatever you want to call
it. You cannot.
12 and 24. You know, hey, you can't do that on television. You can't do it on network television at least. Speed has been able to do it in the past, but they didn't do wall-to-wall coverage. They did, we're going to cover this chunk of time, and then we'll go to this, you know, later on, and then we'll cover that chunk of time, and that sort of stuff.
I think maybe Petit or – I think it may have been Petit or Sebring. Like, the home run events, I think were all when they were on, I don't think they were tape delayed. I think they did the full nonstop coverage. However, it's one of those things, like you said, you cannot go that long on TV.
Yeah.
And you know Speed, they would rather show an episode of Pink's than show you what happened in that half-hour block during a Le Mans race.
We now return you to our featured presentation.
Pink's All Out. Nice. Yes, or the because their NASCAR pack and their NASCAR package as well encompasses so much time with all their stupid cooking shows, all their stupid talent shows. I mean,
Track Chef.
Yeah, Track Chef. It's like, who really cares? Oh, but there's an actual race going on? No.
No.
Nah, who cares about that?
Okay, so, you know, Speed has been moving away from their core audience for a long time as they align themselves with NASCAR. And, you know, that's understandable for them. They're trying to make money, and it made sense for them to go that direction to make money. However, with this situation that ALMS is going into, the thing that that stands out immediately is every race will be live on the internet.
Yes.
Every hour of every race will be fully produced and live on the internet. That's a big jump because, you know, like you said, a couple of their feature events were live on Speed for big chunks of time, but the rest of the races were tape delayed and sent over to NBC and
CBS.
They took a 2-hour and 45-minute race and made it a 2-hour broadcast with only like 1 hour and 20 minutes of that actually being races.
Yeah.
Or racing. So, you know, there's a lot of post-production that happened to that. A lot of human interest stories added in to make the racing more exciting when the racing speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this will allow the core audience of, you know, Le Mans Series racing to enjoy the fully produced live racing, and then have the non-core audience, the people who are curious, to become intrigued by the fully produced versions, shortened versions of the races that go to the broadcast networks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so we won't have to worry about CBS airing the race a week later either. As that was a pet peeve of mine from last year for the Mid-Ohio race.
And then even beyond that, you don't have to worry about the fact that you'd be on, you know, they've been on as many as 4 different networks in the same year between Speed and ABC and, or excuse me, between CBS, NBC, Speed, and I believe at times Spike was in there or something like a TNT, so one of those
some other random
cable networks. So they've had a weird arrangement because they've been buying airtime for a long time. I don't know the level of this. Is it a buy? Is it a wash? Or are they being paid for rights? I imagine it's either a wash or they're being paid for rights.
Mm.
Or excuse me, it's a wash or they're paying for broadcast time.
Yeah.
But then again, maybe this new ESPN3.com is looking for content.
Yeah, it could be
something to throw up there. So I don't know.
Well, I think it'll be good. You know, send the show on the internet, then put a ABC and an ESPN, and people get to see it, and people start to make a big deal about it, and sponsors, exposure, whatnot. And you know, I know that some of the folks had come to the site and said, "Do you not know what kind of problem this is going to cause us?" And I, you know, to be 100% honest with you, I don't see it, because you're not ever going to have, you know, a full, unless it's like Sebring or Petit, you're never going to have a race fully on television like that. I mean, you're just not. So how is this bad? I mean, you're getting the same thing. You get it on the internet, and then you get a slight delay, and you get it on TV. You know, with little choppy bits, and then you get it again on ESPN2. So what's the problem with that? Your series is getting exposure, okay, and people are seeing it. Perhaps sponsorship comes in because people like it, and perhaps you get more cars on the grid. I mean, I truly could be missing something, and you know, I very well could be, but I just from initially looking at it, I don't see the big deal here.
The big deal to me on this that makes so much sense is live on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. This is a platform that's going to explode in the next decade. It already is right now when Netflix supposedly consumes 80% of the internet's bandwidth. That's crazy. People are looking for content to watch on the internet because they're getting rid of their satellite dishes and cable packages because so much is available out there. But live sporting events aren't available on the internet. This is a coup. This is a great idea. And I don't know how much of a coup it is, but they're being kind of, you know, they're kind of being pushed into this situation where they have to take this less than desirable TV deal. In my opinion, the TV side is not as good as they could have gotten. But they're taking the less than desirable TV deal, but the thing that is desirable is live internet coverage of all of their events. As long as it's done well on ESPN3.com and you don't have streaming issues like you have on IndyCar.com, that's a win. And what goes beyond that? Do they then have links to podcasts for it so you can download the race footage? That would be fantastic as well. So,
yeah. Yeah, but I'm still excited. I like the Xbox part. Yeah. So,
oh man.
But alrighty then. Do we have anything else to even talk about?
No, I don't think so. I think that's pretty much the podcast for tonight.
Yeah, that's pretty much just a basic wrap. You know, sorry. sorry if it was.
News has been very slow this week, which is understandable. You're coming off of New Year's, and you know, nobody tried to jump the Golden Gate Bridge in a rally car this year.
It was Long Beach, by the way. Bash chop busted your chops for it, and I should have as well. You nearly were fired, and she was nearly hired because you said San Francisco.
Sorry.
I made such a big deal about that last year too. I thought you cared, you know. I thought you cared about it, but you obviously didn't. God damn, man!
You don't know me. I don't know you anymore.
You don't know me. Oh goodness, it's all the new talent. We have all the new talent on the show, and they're driving a stake in between the loyalties. So.
Oh man. Anyway.
No, that's it. Enough babbling. Let's see. Like to thank special thanks to Guy Smith for following us on Twitter. He got our message. So if you want to, you can follow us on Twitter as well at Open Paddock. It should be. It's usually gets some pretty interesting comments on there. Also, a special thanks. You know, Randy Bernard has went out and now started friending all of the IndyCar blogs on Facebook. So now that Randy Bernard does it, you should be doing it as well. So come on over and support. Sign up on our Facebook. You know, we try to put some pretty good content on there as well. Plus, all of our articles get posted onto the Facebook as soon as they're done, and you know, so it's really convenient. So you don't always have to check the page. So you know, you can just click on the Facebook. So special thanks again to everybody who's followed us within the last few days. It's really cool. It's a really exciting time here at the paddock. So we look forward to bringing you more. But until next week, which hopefully we'll have news next week, you know, keep reading the stuff, and thank you for reading it, and thank you for the downloads. So, Mike, how about you say good night?
Good night, everyone.
Yay. Good night.